Well, it's formerly known as the Music City now, and with respect to our friends in Great Falls, it's now the Electric City, the Rural Electric Cooperative City. We're talking about, yeah, Nashville, Tennessee, where we are again for a second day from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana on the road and cross country. For that matter, here in the Music City, as we are covering this national convention, the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, president of that organization for the first time ever is a Montanan. And Chris Christensen has, I think he's kind of making an impression. Welcome here once again, two decades strong and working on three. And we thank you for that. Thank you so much for that, making us a part of your Montana mornings. Let me tell you what we have coming on. Now, we've talked about Jim Matheson being on the program. He is the CEO of this organization, and he's got a long career, in energy. He served in Congress for seven terms for the good people of Utah, served on the Energy and Telecoms committees in Congress. And there's just a wide range of issues that Jim is going to cover with Taylor Brown and I now. We caught up with him earlier this week. He couldn't necessarily make this live appointment, but that interview is going to come here in just a little bit. We're also going to talk with members of our Montana Rural Electric Cooperatives Association. President D.D. Isaacs is going to be rolling by here. Obviously, it's a convention, and there are a lot of sessions. And matter of fact, Chris Christensen just got done with the morning session there. Gretchen Boardman will be along with D.D., General Manager of Big Flat Electric Cooperative. Now, D.D. also over at Tongue River. And they'll be talking about the sage-grouse proposal. And I'll just leave it at that for a little bit. It's a very important issue. We've addressed it from time to time with various people from Mecca. Taylor Brown is with me here as well this morning.
Isn't this a facility, this music center? We're standing right outside a room where just one ballroom has 5,000 people in it. And you look out here at where you are, Tom, and there's another 1,000 right here.
I know.
but I'm telling you, Chris Christensen just absolutely had him eaten out of the palm of his hand in there a few minutes ago when he gave his president's address. He just shared some cowboy stories and a cowboy's way of looking at things, and they so appreciate that down-to-earth attitude. He's been a phenomenal leader here for the National Rural Electric.
Well, as a matter of fact, he stumped Kate Tillotson with a few of his responses.
She was just stumped. Yeah. Here she is, this professional media person. She's going to, and she just had to stop and laugh. Because his examples are so perfect, and his reality. And he talked about the distance. He says, well, it's 4 hours to the Billings Airport when I want to go somewhere. I mean, they just can't get over that.
And Kate now started her career in Montana as well, and she mentioned that. It's interesting. There certainly is a Montana flavor here.
Oh, yeah, there sure is. Yeah, Kate was at Kalispell. She was a TV reporter in Kalispell before she went on to work out of Kalamazoo, Michigan, was a news anchor there for many years, and now is the head for all of National Rural Electric's communications. And wasn't that impressive last night, that reception last evening when all the national board and practically everybody you and I know in Montana crowded into that room yesterday.
Yeah, and then his son was up there, Chisholm, representing Montana from the arts standpoint, if I might add, or might say. It was quite impressive. And Chris this morning, too, gave an impromptu shout-out to all the Montanans here as well.
It was so heartwarming. This whole thing has just been about Montana showing some leadership for the one time in front of everybody in the nation, and people have been so grateful to see it. And I'm telling you, when the Montana Electric Cooperatives hosted that thing last night, Gary Weens told me it came in under budget. You got to ask Dee Dee that question here a little bit later when you get her on. Say because that was a first class event last night.
It was a total lot of fun, and I appreciated how Chris made connections with everybody in that room. He they call it work in the room, but for Chris, I don't think that was working at all.
It's just natural. No, it's just the way he is, and I bet that most of those 5,000 people just across the hall from you in that new room next door to us here feel the same way.
Well, thank you, Taylor. Appreciate that. Taylor and I will be back a bit later on with Jim Matheson. Interview that, as I said, we recorded earlier. Very impressive. I think the national leader, the CEO, is also pretty impressive.
Well, and he's a guy from the West. You know, he's a congressman from Utah. He's from our time zone. He talks like we do, Tom.
Joining us now, let's say hello. First, Dee Dee. Good morning. How
good
are you?
Good morning. How are you, Tom? I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, good to see you here. And Gretchen Boardman, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you guys both for being here. I busy conference, isn't it, Gretchen? I mean, just super busy.
There are a lot of people, and, you know, we were talking earlier, it's great that there's so many young people here, and it's a great thing that Nashville is able to hold this many people and that we're able to be a part of it.
Taylor had mentioned that as well. It's part of the agenda here when we were speaking with Jim is to raise young leadership. Dee Dee Isaacs, who's the president of the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, also serves on the board Tongue River Electric.
Yeah. That's correct. Southeast Montana.
Yeah. Beautiful. We love that area. Yeah.
It's big for reasons I'm not going to say.
our big signal in Baker gets over there. Talk about leadership. Talk about that focus on leadership and why that's so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, leadership at the co-op really needs to be communicated to all of our membership so that they have a person to go to in times of need. Uh-huh. Communication, education, engagement. In the past year, we had a devastating fire, the Richard Springs fire.
Yeah.
And communication was key for our membership to know what was going on. When was the power going to come back on? It was supposed to take 72 hours, and our lineman took 23.5 hours, I believe it was.
Wow.
A lot of roping and tying. Our board president was out literally fighting the fire.
Is that right?
Yes, and our manager as well, and of course, all of the linemen.
Yeah.
So it was a big process, and talk about engaging your members. Getting the power back on was a big thing for them. They were so thankful. The fire personnel said they have never had so much food in their life. They had to turn away food.
And that's
the
probably
support was,
pretty unusual.
Was 100%,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Gretchen, I want to have you address one of the main things here, and that is this sage grouse proposal. You're carrying that. I'm not sure of the timing on that. Was that already presented? Did you already lobby for that?
Yeah, so we've been working on this for quite some time. Myself, our Central Montana manager, Doug Hardy, has been a key factor helping me with this, as well as the CEO of MECA, Gary Weens. Mm-hmm. And we presented this at Region 9 that we had earlier this year, I guess in 2021.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
It is, right, yeah.
But what we're doing is there's a potential that, you know, at some point that some of the states that have sage grouse in them could get on a different program, whether it's regulated through the feds or whatnot. However, we feel Montana has an outstanding program, and we want to keep that local. And when I say local, I mean statewide. Mm-hmm. And so we presented and proposed, and in Region 9 it has passed. So it's now brought to the national level here, and we're hoping that it'll get approved as well. And so basically what we're saying is if the sage grouse is listed under the Endangered Species Act, we urge NRECA to ensure that states with effective sage grouse conservation plans, which we feel the state of Montana has,
Our dedicated committee, we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah.
Yes, the committee's outstanding, are allowed to follow their state plans and to ensure that additional ESA requirements are not imposed within those states. So basically it's saying, hey, we're doing our job, we're doing our due diligence, we're doing our background checks, we're doing crossing our T's, dotting our I's, basically. So we want to make sure that we don't lose that. Everything that we've worked for, Governor Bullock is actually who put that in place, I believe, in 2014, and it's just gotten better every year. It's just the co-ops have been able to work directly with the state, with that Montana Sage Grouse Committee oversight team that you just kind of mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we've worked, and made sure that we feel we're protecting ourselves, but we're also making sure that we're aware, and everyone around us, our members, et cetera, are aware how important it is to keep the bird off the endangered species list.
Well, and I think the point of that is that the job is being done to probably the very best ability it can be done at this point, and just getting interference in that is probably going to take, you know, move that program back a little bit.
Yeah, you know, yes and no. You know, I think that there's always pushback on certain things, but mm-hmm. I think these other states that don't have sage grouse, they also have endangered species. So they understand how their endangered species has affected their co-ops. So they're fighting for us as well. Even though it may not affect their state, it affects co-ops. It affects our lines. It affects our power. It affects our effectiveness to keep safe, reliable power.
Dee Dee, I'm going to have you follow up on that, because president of our Montana Electric Rural Cooperative Association, MECA, it's a lot easier to say MECA.
Yeah, correct.
How does this affect our co-ops?
Well, it's a huge effect. It's a trickle down, and we have spoken to nationwide. We've gone to D.C. last November. Gary and I and Charles, our government relations individual, went and trying to express just exactly what would happen if this took place, if the rider was removed, how it's so hard to get power lines fixed, put in, transmission lines, you name it. If you've got sage grouse leks in an area, they're asking you to go, I believe it was like 2 miles around a lek.
Wow.
Well, that cost is a pass-through to your membership.
And leks could be rather large. Leks, by the way, are these breeding grounds for sage
grouse.
Stomping
grounds.
In various areas, yeah.
Yes,
and
correct.
They can be quite wide. So that adds quite a cost to it.
Yes.
How are you managing these leks with this program?
We joined in 2015, along with BLM, their plan. And so the linemen would go out and they would do attachments on the poles so that possible predators, if that's where they wanted to land, was on your poles and wires, that they couldn't land there. Mm. And that's about all we've done other than right-of-way cleanup, that type of thing, mm-hmm. and trying to stay out of certain areas when they are in their breeding season. That's really intuitive, really important.
Gretchen?
Yeah, we have also, we've made sure that there is no construction built during their mating seasons, and it's key. I mean, the MSCOT committee, when we need to do that, we avoid it at all costs. Unless it's an emergency situation, we avoid it. And, I mean, that's plain and simple. And there's a lot of times that, you know, sure, we'd love to be there. It's summer. That's
right.
When our lines are available.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that that's what makes the co-op so special. We work with everybody. It doesn't have to be another co-op. We work diligently with the BLM. We work with the FWP. Our local BLM, I feel like he's on my speed dial one.
Yeah.
I shouldn't
yeah.
really quite say one, maybe two. We'll get
yeah,
it.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, we have such a phenomenal relationship with our local BLM, and they've helped us. I feel we've helped them, and that's key. I mean, you have to have that working relationship with all those entities. Going to the state level, talking to the FWP, you know, a few years back when Gary and Doug Hardy and I did that, it was phenomenal. I mean, we learned so much, and understanding how it all goes in a full circle.
How was this resolution received by the national organization? You talked about Region 9 adopting it. Not everybody has a sage grouse problem. How was it received?
Actually, I feel really strong. I feel good about it. Regions 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10 were all very supportive. And I hope it's going to be a resolution this afternoon. Oh, I think at 11, I think, is when we vote.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I feel strongly that it will pass. And that's what we need. You know, just like we would be willing to support other ones, hopefully those other regions that did not, at the beginning, have heard us out. They've listened. We've had one-on-one talks with some of those managers, some of those board members, and our legislative committee for NRECA, Mark Hayden out of Missoula, is on that committee. And he's a huge voice for all of Montana always. And I know that he's speaking on our behalf, and I trust him.
We're going to come back after a break and maybe talk about that. Dee Dee Isaacs with us, President Mecca, Gretchen Boardman, General Manager of Big Flat Electric Cooperative. Come back and talk about the cooperation that is also one of the themes here in Nashville. Back with more from Voices of Montana in just a bit.
Thawing out a water tank at 30 below is not fun. Keep your water open this winter with the tank heater from Western Ranch Supply. This is Shane. And at Western Ranch, we carry a full line of heaters from sinking, floating, and propane to heaters for automatic waters. With thermostats and elements in stock, we can get repair parts to you immediately. Don't let Mother Nature catch you by surprise. Pick up a tank heater or call and have us deliver it. Western Ranch Supply, serving the big country.
We'll be talking about dam breaching here very shortly with Jim Matheson, who's the the CEO of the organization. That's one of the topics to talk about. One of the things we'll talk about as we're back live in Nashville, it just sounds so weird coming out of your mouth, is where we are for Voices of Montana, from Montana, for Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. Also, we'll talk about the cooperation. Dee Dee Isaacs is with us here for President of MECA, and Gretchen Boardman, too, General Manager of Big Flat Electric Cooperative. Spend some time talking about sage grouse. Let's talk about this cooperation, Dee Dee. I'm hearing it from a lot of the national leaders, even the all the board members who I chat with, and we get we'll spend time chatting with people. That's part of the fun. There's really a focus on cooperation here. Does that is that unique? Do you think for the co-ops?
Oh no, I think it's embedded in the model of the co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Cooperatives have always been cooperative across the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important, as Gretchen mentioned, the resolutions process. Cooperatives will do their due diligence, they'll read the information, and then they can vote along with you on that resolution, and we do the same thing. Cooperation among cooperatives is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the model, you know, like the very foundation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Gretchen, Big Flat Electric, is there an example that comes to mind when you have your neighbors who say, hey, and give you a call, Gretchen, you need some help with this? How are you guys just cooperating real close to each other?
You know, I'll actually use Dee Dee's example, which she was talking about their wildfires. We've also had this when we've had major storms, but I'll talk about the wildfires just briefly, and Dee Dee can key in on it as well. But as soon as we first heard about those fires, Terry Hansen, who's their general manager, and Rosa Lee, who is, I don't know her title, operations.
She's an engineer.
Yeah, engineer something. They called right away seeing if we had any excess poles from the Keystone Pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
We had not, but Norval did. They were able to instantly get poles transported immediately. They were able to get some hardware. That takes time, you know, and finding right things that will fit your fit takes time. However, right there in our state, we were able to help. Norval did an outstanding job. I know they got other help. I believe, did you guys have other cooperatives come in?
We had a slew of cooperatives come in to help. Linemen just poured in.
That's really the cool thing about it. You mentioned, the pipeline, Keystone XL. When they pulled out there, they kind of left some things behind for Big Flat and other electric cooperatives to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and interestingly, Sun River Electric, for us, they had an irrigation district coming in, and they were able to purchase a majority of those excess supplies.
Yeah.
We were beyond blessed. I mean, and that was part of the networking you get here, like at Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were able to put word out that we were going to have items available and for sale. And, I mean, people were reaching out to us before we even got a publication out, which is outstanding. But that's what it is. I mean, the cooperative way is your voice is heard. And we had, you know, just in our state, another Jason Brothen was over from, you know, Sydney area. He had contacted me and said, you know, I might know some North Dakota co-ops. So, I mean, it goes hand in hand. Everyone works together to make sure that we are the best we can be.
Did you purchase those poles then in advance?
Yes, we had purchased everything, and then we were reimbursed through TransCanada. So all the finances were funded by TransCanada or TC Energy. And
it's nice to have that liability, though, as you say, accounted for.
Yes.
Down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Dee Dee, I want to ask you, what do you want your Montana Rural Electric Cooperative Association members to pull away from this conference?
Well, in my little campaign speech, I pushed for unity, and it has taken place already. Whereas we had Yellowstone Valley's Dave Kelsey reached out to one of our Western co-ops, Flathead Electric, and offered their services, shared services, on the problem that's going on with the breaching of the dams. So east to west, we're working together, and if there is a problem, I'm hoping that all the co-ops will reach out to other Montana State co-ops and offer a lending hand. Just being helpful.
Yeah.
Always.
Gretchen, in 30 seconds, what are you pulling away? What are you bringing back to Big Flat Electric?
I think the key, like I said, is networking. There is so many people, you know, nationwide that we get to meet, and those are resources. Those are resources whether we need to learn about a transmission line, a distribution line, or a sage grouse, or maybe another possible ESA, you know, issue. So anything that we can get to improve ourselves is a benefit when we get to come to these. They're amazing.
Thank you guys for coming here and sharing those thoughts with us, too. I really appreciate
that.
And we'll be talking down the road. Like I said, I was joking, but I'll give you guys a call every week to come on, okay?
Well, we appreciate all you guys do. So thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Gretchen Boardman and Dee Dee Isaacs. We'll take a headline break and come on back with Jim Matheson right after this.
Opportunity, safety, teamwork. That's what's waiting for you at BNSF Railway. BNSF is hiring track maintenance positions with competitive salary and benefits in 19 cities across Montana and North Dakota. Track maintenance is vital not only to rail safety and reliability, but also the nation's supply chain. We need people like you to keep our network moving efficiently. Visit jobs.bnsf.com to learn more.
All right, right into this interview with Jim Matheson, who's the CEO of the National Rural Electric Cooperatives Association.
First of all, Jim, I do appreciate you spending some time with us here. I know there are a lot of issues to cover, you know, regionally, as you have these so many thousands of members and hundreds of co-ops that is part of this organization. There are different regional challenges. And so as you come together here in this national meeting, you have an opportunity to maybe tackle or discuss some of those regional challenges. What's on your mind?
It's really good to have the opportunity for all of our members to understand that every co-op has its own set of circumstances, but we all share this same mission, that we're these consumer-owned co-ops owned by the communities we serve. We're all non-for-profit. No shareholders can address any financial issues. It all goes to the consumer at the end of the line. So it's good to compare different circumstances. You learn from each other's experiences, and it sounds kind of cliche, but these are cooperatives. They actually do cooperate with each other. And I don't think you can say that about a lot of different sectors in the economy. But with electric cooperatives, that's really the case. So the opportunity to gather, which we do once a year for this annual meeting, share ideas. We call this meeting the power exchange because we want people to exchange ideas, exchange information, learn from each other. There's a lot going on in the energy sector right now, and there's no shortage of topics for our group to discuss.
The individualness of all these regional challenges, you might have an idea where something is working in the East but doesn't work in the West, or maybe you find something that does work in the East and works in the West. Does any example come to mind that you guys have tackled issues where your co-ops are learning from each other?
You know, it's interesting. When we talk about, let's say, hydroelectric assets, a lot of times we look at the Pacific Northwest, which has a heavy amount of hydropower, and that extends all the way through, you know, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana. But it turns out there's hydro all over this country. So while those big dams attract a lot of the attention, and rightly so, what we learn on our lobbying and advocacy work in the hydropower space really affects. There are roughly 900 electric cooperatives who are members of NRECA. We were looking, over 650 of them are part of the federal hydro system in some way or another. So when I joined the job, I thought, oh, hydro, Northwest, you know, that's just what you think, right? But it turns out it really reaches a lot more of our membership. And the lessons learned are really helpful.
This is a perplexing issue because for advocacy reasons, there's groups out there that want to breach these dams. It may not actually help them achieve their agenda when it comes to carbon-free production. And there's a lot of politics involved in this. Speaking of breaching the dams, it's something that we're facing an awful lot of. There's been new proposals to study. There have been members from Congress who have proposed breaching. And I was speaking with Gary Weens just a little while ago, and we were talking about this. And what surprised us both a little bit was when they first approached this idea, Jim, about breaching the dams, he said, and I said, I just didn't think that was going to go anywhere. I didn't think it made enough sense at all that it was really going to get some momentum, but it seems like that is getting some momentum. And then, as you say, 650 out of the 900 have some kind of connection to hydro. It's obviously an issue. How are you guys tackling that?
Well, first of all, we've heard loud and clear from our members, we do not want to breach the dams. That is because we're a democratically run organization where our members vote on our resolutions to say what our national association should advocate for, and our membership has been very clear about maintaining those dams. I have to say, on the one hand, we should always be concerned when we hear these discussions and other people coming up with ideas about breaching the dams. I do have confidence on a couple of things, though. One is the actual impact of breaching those dams, the loss of this stable, carbon-free source of energy is significant. And for folks who are concerned about carbon emissions in this country, to replace those dams with carbon-free resources, I'm not sure you can with the level of reliability that those dams offer. But secondly, the cost would be astronomical. So if the studies are done appropriately, I don't have a problem having people look at this and tell you, this is what you're going to have to do to replace it, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be a prohibitively high cost. On the other hand, as you mentioned, there's politics involved. And whenever there's politics involved, that doesn't mean we're always doing the clear, dispassionate study of things. But I will say my experience in talking to folks, the elected officials in the federal delegation, members of Congress and Senate from the various states associated with the Columbia River system, I think most of them, in a bipartisan way, do not want to breach the dams. And it's important for us to continue to be a clear voice on that issue, to make sure that this is an issue we're ignoring and not have those elected officials ever want to start thinking about changing their mind on it. I don't think this issue is ever going to go away in our lifetimes, because I'm not saying they are going to get breached. I'm saying somebody's always going to be arguing for it. So it's important for us to be a rational voice and talk about the importance of those assets.
Again, that's Jim Matheson, president of the National Organization, 900 co-op members. We're back with more of this interview from Voices of Montana in just a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Our mascot is a grizzly, but we never hibernate. With the sixth fastest growing research enterprise in the nation, the University of Montana is committed to solving the most pressing challenges facing our state. UM Grizzlies are in your communities, improving access to quality health care, protecting natural resources, researching land and water use, and developing new teachers, doctors, lawyers, and launching small businesses. Learn more at umt.edu. Up with Montana.
Very energetic, very alive, I guess, sort of the same word here at the Omni Hotel is where we're at in Nashville, Tennessee, from Montana, for Montana, from Nashville. It's Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz back alongside. Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Covering 2 days of this national election. Chris Christensen, the leader of this national organization. There are 5,000 to 6,000 people here. And we're just right above Music City Center in Nashville. We're using that entire facility for this conference. It's really well done. A lot of breakout sessions. I got to get right back into this interview. We had a chance on Sunday to catch up with the CEO of this organization, and that's Jim Matheson. And again, a full interview, just enough time to get it in here in this segment. Taylor Brown also joined me for this, and we have a lot of conversation here to come. We kind of covered dam breaching, and now as we go back into this interview, Taylor Brown has the first question for Jim.
Jim, one thing I wanted to mention, I think we've probably got more Montana co-ops here than we've ever had, with Chris being the national president this year. But the things they're learning from their fellow members across the nation, you talked about cybersecurity, and I would like to go to that. You don't think about that when you're way off in a remote rural area until you realize you've had co-ops, you said, in the last few months paying to get ransomware removed. Describe what that's like and what you can do about it.
Well, you set up the question very well. I think we used to always think about cybersecurity in the electric system as people attach the high voltage grid, and you think, oh, if I'm a smaller distribution electric cooperative in a rural area, I'm not the target. I'm not the one that's taken down the grid. But this ransomware component, where we got the bad guys wanting to infiltrate your system with a virus, hold your data hostage, everyone's a target now. And we have seen that, unfortunately, with a half a dozen of our electric cooperatives across the country have been hit with ransomware attacks in the last couple of months. And yes, a couple of them paid roughly $3 million each to get their data back. Now, some of them had insurance policies to help with that payment, but that's a lot of money for an electric cooperative. So we really, and if you're a smaller electric cooperative in terms of staff size, you may not have a big group of IT professionals on the staff. So what we've done as a national association is we've tried to create programs and training that electric co-ops can go through to do self-assessments about what their cybersecurity risks are, steps they can take to minimize those risks. And this is sad to say, the world we're living in, this is never going to go away. But I do like the fact that electric cooperatives are sharing this information with each other and learning from each other about the steps they can take to lower the risk of a cyber attack. And I got to tell you, I kind of beat it like a drum these days when I'm talking in front of our members. I say, listen, this isn't theoretical anymore. This has actually happened to some of our members. It's really unfortunate. And we all got to double down on trying to make sure we mitigate that risk as best we can.
Let me also talk for a second about the electric industry and the co-op, the power industry in particular, has a long history of responding to natural disasters. Seems like every time there's a national disaster, it's the local electric cooperative that has to start putting things back together or going across the country to help their fellow co-ops put things back together. One of the interesting things to me at this meeting here in Nashville is
is the whole tech conference, the whole Tech Advantage conference is geared toward technology in this respect of protecting against disasters, protecting against our lack of the technology in place. It's just amazing to me what the Tech Advantage is bringing to the picture. Describe that and relate that to the disaster recovery.
You've raised a couple of really interesting issues. First, there is this long-standing tradition of what's called mutual assistance. If one co-op has a problem from a significant weather event, other co-ops from within the state or from surrounding states or maybe a few states away, they come in and help restore the power, because it may be hurricanes on the Gulf Coast, it may be ice storms in the Midwest, it may be wildfire damage, different disasters, it still creates the same problem. If the lights are out, people want to get the lights back on. So it is a wonderful tradition among the co-ops that they share line workers, share employees, and people step up to the plate to try to get it resolved. The issue right now about trying to find better ways to harden the system, to create a popular word right now is being more resilient. And investments in technology are part of that, and investments in actually hard assets, you know, to harden your system. Both of those are steps that a lot of our electric co-ops are trying to evaluate right now. If you deploy the right technology, you can detect where you've got problems developing, and you can eliminate or at least reduce the level of the outage so fewer people are affected. That's the really exciting opportunity technology gives. And I have to say, in terms of investing in your system to harden it, the new infrastructure bill that went through Congress in the last year, which has many, many opportunities, different components of the bill that electric co-ops could be interested in. One of them is about this. It's about hardening the system for greater resilience. And so we at NRC are trying to create a basic understanding for all of our members to apply for grants to make sure they can invest in their systems. Because, you know, when you're out in rural America, you sometimes are out at the end of one line. And there's no duplication, no redundancy. And so anything we can do to make sure that the lights stay on is something that I think it's an investment we want to make.
Let me follow up with that. What's the pipeline for those grants?
Great question. Look, first of all, the infrastructure bill in general is a huge bill, bipartisan bill that passed Congress. There are 27 different programs that could be of interest to electric cooperatives. Doesn't mean every co-op should look at all 27. Some of them are going to take a lot of time, to be honest. Congress created a new program. They don't even have the agency set up who's going to distribute the funds, and that agency's got to figure out what are the criteria by which they're going to distribute the funds. So what we're doing at NREC right now is we're meeting within the Department of Energy, Department of Transportation, to talk to these entities who are setting up these new programs, because they're, let's say, it's electric vehicle infrastructure. There's a cybersecurity component of the infrastructure bill. There's a grid hardening. There's using smart meters and more and evaluating more data that uses a utility. The infrastructure bill represents a huge opportunity for electric cooperatives, but it's going to take some time. And you asked the right question. This is not where money's going out the door today. It's going to take some time. I can share with you one other thing we're doing as a National Association. We're trying to put together groups of co-ops. We call it a consortium, where we may have, and I don't know what the final number is going to be, 200, 300, 400, 500 co-ops in one group to bid once for a grant among all of them. We think there's strength in numbers. We think there's strength in quality of the bid if we do that as a collective group instead of a bunch of one-offs. And that's what we're trying to do to help our members realize the benefit from those infrastructure programs.
Jim Matheson, again, Chief Executive Officer of the NRECA, 2001 to 2015, served the people of Utah for 7 terms as a U.S. House of Representatives on Capitol Hill. I'll get back to you in a minute here, Taylor. I want to finish up, follow up on this. You said something earlier about you're local, you're national, and you're global. And when Taylor mentioned disasters, that is international. When you're talking cybersecurity, you're not going to be real successful unless you take an international approach. How strong is the NRECA internationally?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have had an international division within NRECA that's been around since 1962. President Kennedy came to our national association and asked if we would be part of what back then was called his Alliance for Progress, where he recognized that bringing electricity to parts of the world that don't have it creates greater stability and creates greater ally of the United States if we help them with economic growth and opportunity. So our international program, primarily through funding from USAID, which is the State Department, or the World Bank, or other sources, we've connected over 160 million people around the world since 1962 in terms of rural electrification. It's something we're real proud of. It's something you don't hear a lot about. But I do think it, when you take a step back and think about it, imagine life without electricity. I mean, that's what happened here in the United States with electric cooperatives back in the 1930s. We electrified the rural areas where no one else would. The for-profit companies wouldn't do it. Even when they were offered incentives, they wouldn't do it. So the people living in those areas each put up $5 to create their own member-owned co-op. That's how it started. And look where we are today. We serve 42 million people in America. But that international component, I think, is really interesting. And by the way, the technology developments for these rural areas in particularly in sub-Saharan Africa right now, a lot of microgrids, a lot of stuff where there's not the big transmission infrastructure. So you're doing microgrids in small areas. And that's where technology's taken a lot of things right now. And NRCA is really actively involved in that.
And I like how you do things on the ground. When people think international, they think, oh, it's people in suits and meetings. But you guys go into Bolivia. Montana sends members into Bolivia to get power to people who live in those remote areas. That is real international relationship.
Well, there's no question. And those are really quite emotional experiences for the volunteers who go do that. And that's all volunteer. When Montana sent a bunch of linemen to Bolivia to do that, those folks volunteered their time. The co-ops raised the funds to pay for the trip to go there. And what you're literally doing is turning the lights on for the first time in this village. I mean, it's here we are in 2022. We all take this for granted, don't we? Every time we flip the switch, we know what's going on, right? But there are still people in this world where that's not the case. And so it's part of our mission. It's part of who we are, is the benefit of electrification. And I'm glad that the folks, that volunteer group from Montana, had that opportunity. It's one they're never going to forget for the rest of their lives.
This is so cool to be able to sit with you, Jim, and talk to you about what National Rural Electric is up to. But for my first time here, at this national meeting, and I am so impressed among these 6,000 members as I walk around and look at the halls. The age is pretty young. And then I realized your Next Generation Leaders Conference that's part of this is focused on just that. You talked about the hard assets and the infrastructure, but you're also working just as hard, it seems to me, on the soft assets, developing the emerging co-op leaders.
It's a great point. That is one of the focuses, particularly of this meeting this year. And, you know, we've always scheduled, historically, we've had this annual meeting where we get together and vote on member resolutions, and often that attracts managers and the directors of our local co-ops, which may be a little higher in age. But this tech advantage that you referenced earlier is we've added this on where it's more of a technology-centric set of both general sessions, but also breakout meetings where you can have interactive conversations. And that's attracting a lot of the younger employees at the co-ops that are in the engineering and operations side. And it's really neat to see them at the meeting because they're going to be the future leaders of those co-ops. But having them come here now and learn that dynamic where co-ops share information, learn from each other, the tech advantage part of this conference is really where we've grown. And I'm thrilled to hear you say you've noticed that, because I think if you came to this event 10 years ago, before we really were big on tech advantage, you would have said something different. You would have said, man, that's a lot of old folks walking around here. But that ain't the case anymore, and I find that really exciting.
One thing I would like to talk about in this uncertain world we're right now, Jim, the uncertainty about energy of all types is just critical. I am looking at what's going on in the Ukraine and what's going on with our desire to not get energy from countries that don't treat humanity like we want them to be treated. So I'm thinking to myself, you must be concerned about the big picture. If you're trying to provide as many customers as you're trying to reach across America, it must be concerning to you the lack of regard for energy that our country has right now and the seemingly willingness to jump right back into being energy dependent on other countries.
You know, it's really an interesting question. Of course, there are different types of energy that are used for different applications, but in the electric sector, if you look at what's been going on, the new generation built in this country over the last, let's say, decade or so, it's been pretty heavy on natural gas. And yet at the same time, we're talking right now about really expanding our exports of natural gas, which may be great for the rest of the world to have the U.S. supplying it. But that natural gas is also becoming a more critical part of the how we make power in this country. And so we're part of a global market. Electricity, you think, you know, you don't run electricity around the world. You think it's more of a domestic issue. But the natural gas market is a global market, and natural gas is a big part of electricity. So you've hit the nail on the head. We are part of this more global issue where 30, 40 years ago, you never would have said the electric industry had that global perspective. But now we do, because we're affected by those global issues. I have to say that, you know, there's a huge effort on technology development in this country. That's exciting. I think the renewable technologies have gotten cheaper, and they may be a piece of the portfolio. But at the end of the day, what you have to have is always available resources, baseload resources, resources that are available 24/7. Because I know, you know, there's a lot I don't know. Here's one thing I know about people in this country. They expect that light to go on every time they flip the switch, whenever it may be. And that's a thing that electric co-ops are real passionate about. We talk about reliability and affordability, and those are sort of the bedrock principles of how we operate every day.
A couple of questions regarding what you want people to come away with. What do you want the Montana delegation to come away with?
I want all of our Montana electric co-ops who are here to recognize the value of this network. All the little stories we tell turn into one big story that's a lot more powerful. And there are ways that we can learn from each other, taking on a lot of new dynamics that are coming at every one of those co-ops. Technology's driving change in terms of how power is delivered. How are you going to handle electric vehicles? How are you going to handle if people get a programmable thermostat and change the way they use electricity? The consumer has more decision-making power. How do we all learn how to leverage that where that's a value to the co-op and the community as well? I think this is a great resource. The sharing of advantages. As I said earlier, this is called power exchange. And we're all in this together. And I don't think you find that in other sectors. People share that information.
So you're coming out to the summer meeting, are they going to put you on a boat, a horse, or a golf course?
I'll take the horse if I have my choice, to be honest. But I'm looking forward to coming to the Montana Statewide Association of Electric Co-ops summer meeting. I'm from the Mountain Time Zone myself, so any chance I get to be in that part of the country, I guess you know where I'd like to be.
We appreciate you, Jim. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Right. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll head to break and come on back for closing thoughts live from Nashville on Voices of Montana.
At American National, we understand the tried and true farm and ranch lifestyle, and what's important to you is important to us. You deserve an insurance plan custom made to meet all the specific needs of your agribusiness operation. American National offers flexible farm and ranch policies with package options to help better protect your livelihood. We're right by your side. For more information and to connect with a local American National agent, just visit an.insure/northwest. American National Property and Casualty Company and Affiliates, Springfield, Missouri.
Quick shout out to Eric Young, our in-studio engineer, Ryan Hall as well, comms director for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. A lot of help, a lot of assists up here. We'll have more coverage. Go to our Voices of Montana page and look for our special landing page for all the coverage from the NRECA. And anticipating talking with Mark Hayden a bit later on. Dennis Nelson is also probably going to be lined up for us, so we'll have some conversations with those gentlemen ahead here as well. And for tomorrow's, we'll be traveling back, hopefully. You never know. We will have more continuing coverage here. I've got some interviews lined up with new tech people, and also trying to get somebody from Nashville lined up, too, to talk about this music city. It's quite unique. I'm Tom Schultz. Thank you so much for making us a part of your days here. Appreciate that. We will see you tomorrow with more from Voices of Montana. Bye from Nashville.